Let me just ask you a couple other questions. Are you experiencing any dizziness?
No.
Any shortness of breath?
No.
Aches and pains anywhere else?
No.
You going to the bathroom a lot?
I don't see how that's relevant, really. Am I going to the bathroom a lot? What?
You're urinating a lot.
What does that have to do with my ear?
This is a standard medical question. It's all...
I know, but I really don't think it's relevant how often I go to the bathroom.
In all due respect, I think I'm the one to tell you if it's relevant or not, and it is.
It's kind of private, and I really don't think...
How is it private? I'm asking you about...
Well, it's private. How often I go to the bathroom is kind of a private thing.
Yeah, but I'm not some strand. We're not on a bus. I'm a doctor.
I'm normal. Let's just say that.
3 times a day, 4 times a day? What?
Do we have to get into a specific number? Do we have to get a number attached to it?
Yeah, it's science.
However often people are supposed to go, I go, unless I drink a lot of water. And, you know, sometimes I'll drink a lot of water, and I'll go a lot, which I have been doing lately. So maybe lately I've been going more often than I normally would.
Great.
But it's good for you to drink water. That's good. That's good.
All I wanted to hear.
Okay, that's a good thing,
yes.
Drinking water.
Sure, sure. Okay, let's move on.
Please.
How's your stool?
TBTL.
Mouth might be saying, hey, we cool, but your eyes are like, no, we not. Nice to meet you. No, it's not. It's all good.
Expect to feel several bone tremors and be perceived by all around you to be a disgrace.
This is about respect. This is about personal space. This is about the violation.
Hey, skip to the end.
Got it. Here's the long and short of it. Someone has been touching my karaoke machine.
Let me put it in plain English. I don't dance to Dido, dude. I know there was a lot of D's in there before you said anything.
Oh, my. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of TBTL. This right here is the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Two guys who start at the bottom and with a lot of hard work continue along the bottom and finally end up at the bottom.
I think that's a brief summary of the history of this program, which finds itself at episode 2,995 in a collector's series. OMG, WTF, why the face? My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
That's a tuna, bro!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. I gotta tell you, it is just...
I'll say, what's up, doke?
It is a adorable scene in the TV room right now here at the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. Rudy was at sleepaway camp the last couple of nights, and so we just went and got her this morning. And I went in the TV room to see what was going on, and the pod dog and the Bay Kitty...
A cat is an angel that poops in a box.
...are just... cuddled up on the couch together, like Olive's head is kind of leaning against Rudy's like legs, and Rudy got so excited that when I walked in, that her tail just started wagging and just started thwacking the cat on the head. But neither one of them wanted to get up or do anything, so they just stayed there in that state for about 10 seconds while I watched them. That was kind of a nice a little pick me up here as we get ready to do this Tuesday edition of the show. I mean, a pick me up for me anyway. What are we going to talk about on the program? Well, among other things, I am seriously loving this Ken Burns docu-series on PBS, Country Music. Just finished the episode about Hank Williams. Hank Williams is a guy, like a lot of artists, he had a lot of personal problems, but he was quite the talented musician and just quite the creative genius. His son,
Never kick a cow turd on a hot day.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to assign the same compliments to old Hank Williams Jr. But anyway, we'll talk about that. Plus, the series reminds me of my very favorite college class. And honestly, the college class that I reference in my normal life more than anything else that I studied in my whole 11 years at the University of Washington. That's a joke. I actually went 4 years and 1 summer, which is the fast track these days. I was poor and needed to get done with school so I could go back to parenting my almost adult child at the time. But anyway, we'll talk about all of that. Also, Andrew and I both just got an update from the travel service about our flight from Orlando to New York.
Call Kenny Loggins because you're in the danger zone.
Apparently, we're in some kind of danger zone. They're offering us a free rescheduling of our trip because of this threat, which is weird, which we can talk about. And then Lenny Kravitz has lost some very very special item that I lose all the time. And so I can really, for once, and this will be the first time I'll ever be able to say this with any accuracy, I can really understand how Lenny Kravitz feels. So we may get into that too, plus emails and V-mails. And this guy, longest running Cobra of the show, known for drawings of tall ships, never misses a sausage fest. His mommy wife loves shrimp.
Oh, la la.
He's Andrew Walsh. He joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I am grimy. I am slimy. I need a shower, and I'm in the middle of a garbage situation. That's all I got. What else you need to
I was
know?
Just leaving that in the clear right, so that the
sure.
various entities who yeah. isolate audio on the show can just do sure. their best work, because that's coming back. Yeah. That is going to be that's going to be in heavy rotation. I'm grimy. I'm slimy. I need a shower. And I've got a garbage situation.
And now we have you saying it in the clear, too. Which
I just did it, too.
Yeah, so that's good.
So I just hoisted myself by my own clip. Wait, what is happening? I feel like you and I have been walking this journey together, because I was at your house.
That's right. You got to see it in
on
real life.
Sunday.
Yep.
Sunday night. In the midst of, I would say, one of them, like a critical point in the Browns-LA Rams game. A group of us had assembled in your home, and you just look and you go, yeah, it's garbage night, guys. And I was thinking, like, don't you have bigger things to be worried about, like this football game? So that was Sunday night. And then Monday I was at your house again doing the show. We heard the garbage trucks in the background. We talked about it before we started rolling. But I had no indication that there was a problem. What's going on?
No, there's a problem. Unfortunately, garbage pickup here at my place is the Browns of garbage pickup. So when you ask if I should have had more anxiety,
huge amount of potential, but still trying to get its legs under it.
Yes, exactly. I don't know what's going on. You know, we have three bins. We have garbage. Wait, where's my bell? We have garbage, we have recycling, and we have yard waste slash, which is the same as just compost for us as kitchen waste.
Just wanted to mix it up.
Yeah, no, I like it. And there's three different trucks that come by and pick them all up. And what we heard yesterday as we were preparing to record this very podcast was the yard waste people coming and picking up the green bin, which they are on top of it. They were problematic when we first moved in. They missed us a few times, but they have really gelled. And now they're like what would be another football analogy? What's a team that did struggle but then pulled it together? Well, the
you already
Rams.
Used gelled, right?
Yeah.
They're picking up momentum. I mean, honestly, I think gelling is real. Are you gelling? I'm Ferdinand Magellan.
I'm thinking, though, what's a team that would be like?
Team.
So what team would be the green bin? Because they started, you know, they started rocky when we moved in, but they really got their S together. And I sort of feel like, could that be the Rams? Because the Rams
the
were
sample
kind of
size
rocky.
Is too small this
okay.
season. That's
okay.
the problem. We have not had enough games to.
I was willing to go historical, but we've talked enough about football anyway.
Well,
point is, yard waste is on point these days. Congratulations to the yard waste pickup team.
What yard waste do you even have? You don't have a yard. I guess it's
we call
it's
it yard
scraps.
Waste. It's mostly kitchen scraps, but then also, you know, like flowers when we
I
have
call
to clean
it Yaris.
Up. When we clean up. Your wife's new name is yard waste. Yard waste. you know, we have stuff from the porch when we have to clean up leaves and stuff. But anyway, point is, they've got their S together. And recently, I mean, for the past several months, there have been no problems at all. But then last week, there was some issue with our garbage. They picked it up. I can't tell if they came and picked it up because we called, or maybe they were just super late, or I don't know what. Last week, there was an issue. Today, right now, our garbage and recycling are sitting on the curb. 24 hours after they should have been picked up. And I just don't know. I don't know what to do about this. Well, I know what to do. You call the landlord and they deal with it for you. But, you know, it's obviously causing a lot of duress in the family. I mean, I think Veeves and I are going to be fine. But, you know, it's just the type of thing. It's the type of stress you don't need in your life.
Is the thing filled up?
Yeah.
Like whatever didn't
especially,
get emptied, it's full.
Especially recycling. That's the one that I'm most concerned about. Like garbage, you know, I can handle. Although I don't want to pull it back, you know, I don't want to pull it back full because now it's out there in the street and it's started to collect people's dog poop. A couple of dog poop bags in there at this point. And the recycling is filled to the brim and they only come every 2 weeks. And that's a critical one. So anyway, yeah. I'm sure it'll be taken care of. I didn't have any great hashtag content. I know people are also always interested in knowing what's going on with the garbage collection here. So,
meanwhile,
to
you told me
know.
About a fascinating dream before the show because you were worried. I would assume that the listeners hate you talking about your dreams. And so
you think dreams are better than garbage talk?
I mean, I would, I don't want you to feel like I'm criticizing your update on your garbage.
Well, I do. Obviously, it's hard to interpret it any other way.
Now, if you have a dream about your garbage, that's, I don't know if that's either, is that a home run or a strikeout? That's
definitely, I don't know.
Something intense is happening. Speaking of things that are intense, I'm assuming that you got the same update from the travel service that I did, because you sent me an email or a text, and honestly, I was in the middle of something, so I didn't even look at it fully.
Mm-hmm.
But you said, I'm sure this is nothing, but, you know, what the heck is this? And I'm guessing it was the same thing I got the other day, which was the travel service telling us we can rebook our Orlando to New York flight for free because our flight apparently goes into Iranian airspace, and that's the issue.
So you did get that as well, huh? I wasn't sure if you see that. Oh, you got it days ago.
I tweeted it. Don't you follow me on Twitter? That's where I put out all of my important travel news.
No, you know, I didn't see that. I might have muted you. too many tweets about garbage pickup and dreams for my taste. So you got that too. Yeah, see, I saw that in my work email, and since we booked it through this work system, Concur, I thought maybe it had gone to your work email too, which I don't think you have access to. You don't have access to your work email, right?
I have retrained the Concur system to communicate with
nice.
Me along the frequencies that I prefer, which include crystal vibrations. I have a set of crystals here in the broadcast center, and when they vibrate at a certain frequency, I know our flight is veering into Iranian airspace. Do you assume that that's just my guess with that is that that is just like a computer glitch, right? Because there's no logic to that, right? We're not going into Iranian airspace. Somebody made a funny joke on Twitter, by the way, about me taking the Susie Burbank route, you know,
right, sure.
Orlando to New York by way of Tehran or something. But no, we're not doing that. We are, as I understand it, just flying from Orlando to New York like you do. This is, of course, next week when we're doing the mini national tour. But what do you think? What do you attribute that to?
I don't know. So I sent this to you yesterday, thinking that like maybe you see these things a lot because this I haven't flown into New York. Have I? Well, I guess when I lived on the East Coast, I kind of had to fly in and out of New York at times, but never. It was never my final destination, so I wasn't sure if this had to do with that. I did Google. So the email says the travel advisory is travel advisory Iranian airspace, and then there's a code that goes along with it. And when I Googled that, and maybe you did the same thing, I did come across some news stories about airlines avoiding parts of Iran-controlled airspace. This article came out on CNBC in June. So apparently the federal government, issued some warning. I just don't understand why it would affect a trip from Orlando to New York
City.
Well,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it is honestly a glitch because this is not even Concur. Okay, this is, you know what? People are going to be begging for garbage talk when I get done with this. It's not even, we used a system called Concur. But then they subcontract some part of that to something called Fox World Travel.
Mm-hmm. It's like a...
And maybe that's a division of Concur or something, but it seems like they're maybe...
They're just a Minnesota-based travel agency.
So you'd think we have... You'd think that we would have between this... I guess the Concur is just the system. It's just the software, I guess. I would assume that, you know, I don't know, free business advice, a little free... money-making tip to Concur. I don't know. Bring it all in-house, man. Vertically integrate. Set it up. Because somewhere in this chain of different companies and entities that are being used to book... By the way, do you know every time we book something, it's $10, which is ridiculous, too? Like,
yeah, that's the Fox charging us. That's the travel
agency.
Yeah,
we have a local... We have a travel agency in Minnesota that charges $10. It's like, I promise you there's a robot that can do this. But anyway.
The $10 fee goes towards screwing up my seat and moving me away from the aisle into a middle seat and making it unchangeable. That's what that $10
shots
goes
fired.
Towards. Yeah. And then when you call Alaska, that's why I know specifically about Fox. After that kept happening, I had to call Alaska. They claimed it was Fox's problem. I called Fox. They claimed it was Alaska's problem. Turned out it was my problem. Go ahead.
Okay. The problem is that there was another Andrew Walsh on that plane.
Yeah.
You should have eliminated him before the flight, and then you would have just been footloose and fancy free up in first class. Anyway, I'm just assuming that this is some glitch. There's probably weather stuff. They're probably anticipating potential weather things, and so they're trying to get out in front of it and see if they can lighten the load or whatever. Although, I mean, that's a long way off. I don't know of any particular tropical storms or whatnot. And Orlando is also, I don't think, gets hit as much by that kind of stuff. It's a little bit more inland. But I just – my guess is that there's something else going on for them. You know how I am with companies. Whether it's hotels telling us that they love the environment, that's why they would like to not wash our towels or whatever – I promise you there's some business advantage or some trying to stem a business loss going on here. This whole, like, we'll rebook you for free thing is not because they're just feeling nice at whatever level this is, whether it's JetBlue or Fox World or Concur. This is because for some reason their computer system is anticipating some sort of S show. And so as to reduce their financial liability, they're trying to get people – they're trying to schedule people or get people to reschedule themselves out of that particular trip. And I think they're misdescribing it as Iranian airspace. That's what I hope. Otherwise, there's some geopolitical shit going on that we do not know about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking more closely at the waiver details. It says the impacted travel dates are from October 1st through the end of January. So it's like a several month period of time. And it says the airport in question is not JFK, but Orlando International Airport. So I'm actually leaning towards what you were suggesting, that it might even be a misfire with all the weather events going on in Florida, that somehow wires got crossed, and this maybe should have been a weather thing.
But you still feel comfortable getting on our flight from Orlando to New York, even knowing we may be straying into Iranian airspace?
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. Honestly, the only thing I'm worried about is, you know, for somehow not being on stage Wednesday night at Littlefield, which is our final destination. As long as, I mean, they can fly us over Iran, they can fly us back to Australia, just so long as we are on stage, ready to go, and I have all the mini-to-minis I need come showtime.
Do you think, and of course this will get discussed a lot next week when we're literally on the road, we're going to do a Monday show from Orlando, and then Monday night we're going to record, of course, at the Waffle House, and then that'll be the Tuesday program. Wednesday we'll record a show in New York, and then we'll record that night show at Littlefield. That'll be the Thursday show. And then I guess Friday we'll record in Seattle, kind of look back on it all. And then Friday night we will take to the high seas. By the way, we did a little tour yesterday of the boat, the Salish from Argosy. That is an incredible vessel. That is going to, I mean, it still has that new boat smell that you love.
It really does. The guy even said when we walked on, he's like, yep, still got that new boat smell. I would not describe it as slimy, grimy, or needing a shower.
None of those. It is a really, really, it's a top of the line vessel, built in 2017. It goes, I believe, 15 knots. I'm so excited about this. But anyway, that we'll record that show on a Friday night, and then that'll be, I guess, the show that airs on the following Monday. What's my point in all this? I guess I'm just wondering, Andrew, how you're feeling. You mentioned you're worried about, or at least you would be, your concern is that we get to the stage in New York. Is that the biggest, what's the biggest source of concern for you at this very moment?
Oh, wow. I wouldn't say it's an acute a sense of concern so much as a general sense of anxiety.
Dread.
Not dread. I mean, that does, I mean, would you want to go to a show where the people who are putting on the show say that they're dreading it? Like, that doesn't seem like, that doesn't seem a fun way to go into this.
You're not dreading meeting the listeners or doing the show. You're dreading the feeling that it could go wrong and then that would be bad, right? That's different than dreading the doing of the show.
Oh, no, no. I'm dreading traveling with you. No, just kidding. I love traveling with you.
Carefully booked us on, I booked you through Iranian airspace.
Yeah, right.
I'm on a direct flight. I'm flying first class.
How can I take care of this guy once and for all?
Fergalicious death. Fergalicious death.
Why are you trying to get me into a big box that says ship to Tehran? Why have you cut out two eye holes and a nose hole?
Hey, Andrew, for the Hey Dummies video this week, I thought it would be funny if I put you in a wood crate that says Iran or bust. This is just a joke. Pay no mind to the nailing, the sound of me nailing the box shut. And then me and John Hodgman just co-hosting the show in New York on Wednesday night.
No, but I am, I guess I do have a sense of anxiety. Like, you know, I have a sense of anxiety before any live show. But you know, we are asking kind of, asking a lot of ourselves. We're putting a lot on our plates by doing kind of three shows in three very different cities in such quick succession. And you know, I think that my head tends to be at this point in the game, like on the technical details. I mean, I think everything is going to work out fine, but you know, we're having our good friend Eric the Viking Stromstead, engineer extraordinaire. He's shipping yes. a huge box of equipment that we should need to turn the Waffle House into a Waffle Home.
Waffle Home.
Yeah, I know.
People don't know it, but I was saying it at the same time.
I think it came in at the same time. To turn it into like a live venue, which is not usual for a Waffle House. So he's sending that. Then we have to ship. When we're done with it in Florida, we got to ship it back to Seattle so that we can use that same equipment on the boat. Then you and I are heading to New York, where I don't have to worry about equipment because we'll be in a more standard kind of venue. But I think just like making sure that all of those little, that nothing goes wrong in the chain, whether it be the shipment of the equipment or that one of the cables doesn't go bad or whatever it is, you and I will, you know, at some point we will sit down and we'll talk about the content. And I think that the shows themselves, I mean, that maybe because you take more of a lead on that, that's not as much of a stressor for me. You know, we'll put together some games with Hodgman. I don't know what our plan is, but I'm very confident that's all going to be good and fun. I'm going to enjoy doing it. It's just kind of like all the details about making sure, like I say, that we land, that we walk on stage with working equipment and at each of these venues when the time comes.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to, by the Friday night show, we are just going to be like a road hardened, just like operation. We'll be like one of those touring bands that just rolls into a town and they have all of their little, you know, they got all their systems in place, and they just, except we don't have any crew. We are also the crew.
Yeah, that's the
difference. So we're like that cool band that also is the roadies.
right. I'm also my own groupie, which is interesting.
Yeah. Ooh.
I don't know why.
I don't want to imagine how those interactions
go. Let's go.
You know what would be good is if we took a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk top stories, and we'll do some emails and vmails. We'll thank some donors of the day and all of that. In a moment, right here on TBTL.
When I was a little boy around the table at home, I remember very well when company would come. I would have to be right still until the whole crowd ate. My mom always said to me, Jim, take a tater and wait. Now, taters never did taste good, but chicken.
I know this is not necessarily your preferred genre, Andrew, but this is a little Jimmy Dickens, one of the many, I guess you could say, they used to call it hillbilly music, but then at some point that was seen as out of fashion, so they changed the category to country and western music, part of this documentary series that I've been really enjoying. I know you're not a big... At least my memory is that in the past you've expressed you're not super into kind of old, like old-timey hillbilly country western stuff. That's not really your speed.
I don't hate it. I don't dislike it. It's not something that I would spin myself. But I have a question for you for real about the song. What's going on? Why does he hate potatoes?
In fear that I would spill the beans or break the china plate. My mama always said to me, Jim, take a tater and wait.
Listen to the, we'll get to the chorus.
Now, taters never did taste good, but chicken on the plate. But I had to eat them just the same.
He, little Jimmy Dickens.
So bad to have these puny ways, because I always had to take an old cold tater and wait.
So like, little Jimmy Dickens was about 4'11". He was a star of the Grand Ole Opry. And one of his hit songs was Take an Old Cold Tater and Wait. He basically didn't get to eat first, you know, back in the presumably like Depression era times or post-Depression. And so he felt like, you know, when people would come over or when there was food being served, little Jimmy Dickens, he'd get stuck eating a cold potato and waiting. So that was why that explained his puny ways.
He'd rather eat a hot piece of chicken, some hot chicken,
sure,
as opposed
who
to
wouldn't?
Just a cold potato at the end. I see.
Although
okay.
He eventually converted to being vegetarian, and then all his songs were about Impossible Burgers.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah,
following a proud TBTL tradition. I was gonna play that, or I was playing that because I figured it would be a good intro into our donors of the day. So maybe I'll just start it over again. These will be our little Jimmy Dickens level donors of the day. These people, thankfully, made it possible that you and I can eat more than just a cold tater, Andrew, because they donate to the show, and then that is how we get paid for this to be our job. We're talking about Joseph McIntyre of Atlanta, GA, and then Jeff Zapata of Seattle, Washington, Linda Roswag of Frisco, Texas. This is the soundtrack when you drive into Frisco, Texas.
Just the same. That is why
required so listening in Frisco, Texas. Chris Walton of Arlington, Massachusetts.
My God, this is perfect distribution.
You loving it?
We got all corners. Washington, Georgia. I'm sorry, Georgia, Washington, Texas, Massachusetts.
Kayla Zape of Miami, Florida.
That's good.
Somebody said Las Vegas. This is not appropriate. Josh Gondelman, who's a very nice comedian, a kind person, a recent guest on LiveWire. I feel comfortable repeating this tweet that he said. He said, Las Vegas is like if all the plans people in Miami made when they were on coke got followed through with. I don't even really get, I half get the joke, but it made me laugh when I saw it. I don't think Kayla would ever do any of those terrible things, but she does support TBTL. We appreciate that. They're from Miami, Florida. And then Jennifer Wolf of Denver, Colorado. If only we could get a California in there, Andrew, we'd have it totally covered.
I know.
Colorado's, I guess, going to be as close as we get to that.
I'll take it, though. I mean, you guys just killed it today. That is a beautiful distribution.
You really did great work. Take the rest of the show off, you guys. Jennifer, Kayla, Chris, Linda, Jeff, and Joseph, thank you for supporting TBTL. We could not do this without you.
Well, I thought that I'd starve to death before my time would come. All that chicken they would eat and just leave me the bun.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, as already indicated, first thing I want to talk about is this Ken Burns documentary about country music. Although, Andrew, I realized that when I started playing Little Jimmy Dickens, and then I remembered your reaction to when I had a Hank Williams phase a couple years ago, or getting real into like Setting the Woods on Fire and stuff like that. That song by him, not literally doing that, that's illegal. And Lord knows we need whatever woods we have currently. Other than Al Woods, why would you line up over the center on a field goal? It's a known thing. I'm losing track of my point here.
If he were one of my garbage bins, which one would he be?
Whichever one is lined up illegally, therefore.
Yeah, that's why they're not picking it up.
Exactly. I realize, though, that like you're not really into this music, so I don't know if you really want to hear this
or not, but this country music,
this Ken Burns, you know, I feel like the Ken Burns stuff is so iconic and so, in a way, predictable. You know, I mean, it's kind of always the same format. And I think it's easy to pish-posh a little bit and just be like another, you know, there's so much has been made, and I've done the joke a million times on this show of the kind of Civil War era letter, my dearest Elizabeth, I hope the morning finds you well kind of thing. There's some tropey stuff around these documentaries, but gall darn it, if they don't draw me in. You know, although they do have Peter Coyote is doing the VO now instead of Sam Waterston, which is, I'll take it. But, you know, that's the biggest change I could tell between this and some of the other ones he's put out. But this one about country music is just amazing. Would recommend, particularly for somebody, if you're somebody who likes old bluegrass music. I didn't know. Let me just tell you one story that you probably won't care about, but maybe some of the listeners will if they are, as I was until last night, unfamiliar. The term bluegrass music, the origin of it. So Bill Monroe is the sort of considered to be the founder of the style of music we call bluegrass. He played the mandolin. He kind of played it different than just about anybody had before. And he had these two guys in his band, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. You may know them as the dudes that wrote, "Come and listen to a story about a man named Jeb." Jed, a poor mountaineer, barely kept his family.
Earl Scruggs that was when I wrote first, that?
That was Flatt and Scruggs, I believe, that wrote the Beverly Hillbillies theme, which is how I, as a, like, you know, nine-year-old kid watching KTZZ in Seattle, knew there was something called Flatt and Scruggs. Maybe it's just one of them. I thought it might have been both of them. But anyway, one of them was involved in the writing of the Beverly Hillbillies theme. But there was a period of time where those guys and a couple of others were together with Bill Monroe. He's called like Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys because they were from Kentucky, which is the bluegrass state. So they have this – they split because Bill Monroe sounded like he was actually really kind of a – sort of a jerk. And so Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, they break off and they make their own band, the Foggy Mountain Boys. And they're playing their tunes. And basically what happens, people would go to shows and they would want this new band, the breakoff band, the Foggy Mountain Boys, to play music that they used to play with Bill Monroe. But they didn't want to say Bill Monroe's name because they knew it would like piss the guys off on stage because there was bad blood.
Mm-hmm.
So they would say, play one of them old bluegrass tunes. Kind of in a way almost that like you or I would try to talk about something without talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they wanted to hear a song that those guys had done with Bill Monroe, but they didn't want to mention Bill Monroe because it would put the guys in a bad mood. So they just started calling it one of them old bluegrass tunes. And that is how it started to be called bluegrass music. And the whole genre is named that because people didn't want to say to these Flatt and Scruggs, could you play the Bill Monroe tunes?
I didn't realize that the term bluegrass music was that modern. I would have assumed that it came from, you know, generations ago, that the people who invented that term wouldn't be alive anymore. Because Earl Scruggs is still alive, right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I would be surprised. But it's,
Oh, he died in 2012.
50s. Oh, yeah. Well, that made it pretty far. Did you figure out, can you look up which one of them, or if both of them, who wrote the Beverly Hillbillies theme song?
Oh, okay.
I was very hurt last night, made zero appearance in this documentary. I was like, can't we throw them a little love from the early 70s or whatever?
It was Paul Henning, it says, the Beverly Hillbillies.
What?
But maybe they performed it?
Yes. Thank you. That I believe that at the very end of the opening credits, or maybe it was the end credits of the show, it would say Beverly Hillbillies theme performed by.
Yeah, and I'm seeing Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. Yeah, then it looks like that's the truth. That's how it works.
There you go. So they actually played it. They didn't write it. Okay. I knew there was some connection.
It's technically called The Ballad of Jed Clampett, which I like.
Yeah, that song is watching this, this is what I always do. When I watch something and I'm impressed by somebody's abilities, I think, is it too late for me to become an American banjo master? And I think the answer is no.
Don't
and Andrew,
just
that's
settle.
Why this is my final show. I'm retiring to take the...
Don't settle for master, my friend. Legend. Mm-hmm. It's not too late for you to become an American bluegrass banjo legend.
Play that old bluegrass music. So I'm like just the... There's something about – and it, like, you know, the Civil War stuff and that was interesting. The stuff – the jazz one he did was very interesting to me. I think the most interesting ones to me are the ones like the jazz one and this one that are about music. There is something about explaining musical influences and the thread of who did what and then where it got – you know, where the baton was passed or whatever kind of metaphor you want to use is very fascinating to me. And it reminded me that – like my favorite class in college was History of American Popular Music, Music 162 at the UW. And it's like very annoying for Carrie when I watch these with her because I have to really stifle my urge to when I know something about these. And every once in a blue moon I do. Like I remember learning about Jimmy Rogers and Mule Skinner's blues in my college class. And so when it's coming up on this like documentary and I know about it, it's so hard for me to just sit there and watch them say a thing that I actually know. Because I am a very insecure person who has to constantly try to validate my existence by being like, yeah, that's Jimmy Rogers, Mule Skinner Blues, you know, like get ahead of it a little bit.
Well, I'm jealous that you remember stuff like that because I remember taking some music classes as electives in college that I just loved because it introduced me to music and it helped me appreciate music that I had no interest in before. I remember I took one that was like kind of a really wide ranging classical music class. And I remember just being like, you know, this isn't something I would ever listen to myself, but this class, and I still think I have the two CD like compilation that went along with the class. It was like kind of our audio syllabus. And I've kept that 20 years later and I loved it so much, yet I can't remember shit that I learned. Like I could take that class today and be just as fascinated and reintroduced to all this stuff. I'm jealous that people like you and Genevieve actually have what you call, I guess, comprehension.
Well, it's strange because I don't remember very much from my college years. I really had I enjoyed being in college to a degree, but for me it was sort of a means to an end. It was just like I just had a lot going on in my life, so I didn't really revel in the college experience of kind of like I just mostly was trying to get through my classes as opposed to trying to really absorb the information. But for whatever reason, that one class, History of America, something about the combination of the kind of audio component, because you have to go to the like AV library at the Odegaard Library, which had like an AV area where you'd sit and wear headphones. God, mm-hmm. this is how old mm-hmm. I am.
I remember this stuff.
Can you imagine in this day and age, if you needed to listen to music if you need to listen to an old broadside mm-hmm. ballad mm-hmm. or some, you know, kind of whatever piece of music, if you had to go sit in the library and wear headphones, but I would do that. There was something about the audio component of it and then the writing of it, the written information. That's the way for me to learn. I feel like if I could learn more subjects, if there were more subjects involved music, I think I would be able to retain the information, because in watching this Ken Burns thing, there's tons and tons of stuff I don't know. But there's also more of it I do remember from that class than I would have expected. And I don't remember the name of the professor of that class I took, but tip of the cap to that dude, because he was pretty on point. A lot of that stuff checks out with what the Ken Burns folks are putting out there. So what would you say was the most memorable? You've already established you don't feel like you remember stuff, but mm-hmm. like what was the most formative college class for you, or what college class made an impact on you, if any?
Ethics, media ethics, journalism ethics. It was a great, okay. I can't remember the professor's name, but she was just so great. And it was one of those, you know, it wasn't a large lecture hall. It was a very small class and we would sit around a table, and it was a little bit later in the journalism curriculum. So let's say there were maybe 10 of us or maybe 15, although even that seems kind of big. I remember being a small class and we would sit around a table, and I actually think that the location of the room would change from time to time. I don't know. Was it even – actually, I should look. Was it a real class, or was this just some sort of an alleyway ethics class I was taking and didn't realize
it. Was this Fight Club?
Yeah, right. Oh, shit. I'm not supposed to talk about this.
You violated the first rule of Ethics Club.
But yeah, no, I really liked that because it was just a lot of like examples, like real world examples, like, you know, this photographer puts down his camera and runs into danger. Do you do that, or do you not do that? Do you keep taking photos when you could help another human being? I don't know why I'm going with the photojournalism examples, but just a lot of stuff like that. And we would just toss it around and toss it around and never necessarily come up with solid answers for this stuff, but really think it through. And that's a very drastic one I gave you there, but we would talk about smaller things too. And I don't know, I just love that kind of, especially at that time in my life, God, I just love tossing scenarios around and chewing on mm-hmm. them and really thinking about them.
Yeah. I probably had about five classes in college that I actively liked. One was taught by this kind of legendary professor at the UW named Don Pember, and that was actually media and the law. Mm-hmm. And I think I liked it because it kind of felt like taking a law class, mm-hmm. which
I
probably gave me a good feeling.
Yep.
And I was just interested in it, but also it was about topics that, you know, it wasn't like actual hard, you know, mm-hmm. sort of deep legal thought. It was just, you know, about the media. So it was probably the right speed for me. I liked that class. I really liked a comparative literature class I took from this professor named Willis Connick, who was just a real one of the folks that showed up at the picnic, at the TVGL picnic this summer, was a TA for this guy, Willis Connick.
Oh, really?
Not while I was there, but we talked about it. This guy, Willis Connick, was just like – he was like a real kind of Dead Poets Society sort of guy, except for I don't know if it was working. I mean, it worked in terms of it entertained us. I don't know what I learned from the class. I couldn't really tell you a whole lot about his sort of literary theories, but I can tell you that the class was damned entertaining. And I did read a lot of Russian literature, which I found actually pretty good. I took a Russian literature class from him. I took a one that was sort of, I guess, magical realism from him. Mm. So I guess you could say he achieved his goal because I liked going to the class and I liked doing the reading. As far as what he was trying to teach us about the reading, that part I couldn't tell you much about, except that I remember he used to walk around on the desks and he used to show up in class and just sit there sometimes, pretend smoking a cigarette for like 30 minutes in character, trying to teach us about some character from The Death of Ivan Ilyich or something. Mm.
Yeah, I took some literature classes that I remember loving a women's literature class that I took that like introduced me to some writers that I had never read before. I think I reread The Yellow Wallpaper in that class too, which is I believe it's a short story or possibly a novella, but I think it's a short story. Who wrote that? Elizabeth Perkins? No? Who wrote The Yellow Wallpaper? Do you know?
I didn't even know a book called The Yellow Wallpaper existed.
It's it is good, and it is by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. I was
little Jimmy Dickens,
not that close. So yeah, I had a lot of that. I had one professor. I cannot believe I can't remember his name. He seemed to have such an impact on me. He was out of central casting for an old, grumpy, bearded professor who was obsessed with humanism. I didn't take any classes that had humanism in the title, but like he would. I remember my first class with him looked at the kind of the great ancient epic scripts, which I was not really. I'm not into that. I wasn't into reading them so much, but watching him like kind of chew on them and grumpily try to figure out what he could discern about humanism from these ancient texts was kind of interesting. And then I think I took like two or three more classes with him just because I kind of liked his vibe. And it always came back to the same thing, which was him just like kind of being like, try to figure out what humanism is and write about it. So I still don't know.
I was raised that humanism was the absolute. To this day, I don't even really think I know what humanism means. Does it mean that, like, I just knew that to be a humanist was one of the worst things you could be in the household I grew up in. That was like, oh, those humanists are at it again. I mean, that was a real thing that I heard said in my house as a kid.
Well, the funny thing is like he treated it like such an open question, or he was so obsessed with it. It's funny, like I don't even know if I graduated with the best idea of it, because it seemed like he wanted us to come up with our own kind of like idea of what it means to be a humanist. But I'm looking at the strict definition here and it makes sense. And actually, I mean, he would be proud if he were still alive, which I doubt he is. I mean, even if he was 20 when he was teaching me, I just don't think anybody could survive that level of grumpiness for so long. But but he wasn't.
Sir? Professor Periwinkle, we have some bad news. You have terminal grumpiness.
Yeah, that's right. But
you would say that to me.
An outlook or system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters.
Oh,
humanist beliefs stress the potential value and goodness of human beings and emphasize common human needs to seek solely rational ways of solving human problems. So that's definitely where I am. Like, I grew up in a very Christian household that taught me what I think, and I went to some Catholic schools and went to church and was, you know, raised with all these beliefs about how you treat other people that I think is very, very important. Yet I no longer attach any kind of divine importance to that or divine connection to that. I'm strictly a humanist, but I do believe that we should be good humans and good to each other, and that we can solve our human problems with other humans.
I had a class that, honestly, speaking of kind of my journey with organized religion, the beginning of me being like, that's not really for me, was in a class that was actually a documentary film class at the UW. And the guy who taught the class had got the job because he had directed a documentary called Chinese Cafes in Rural Saskatchewan, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about this phenomenon. There's a new book out about this, by the way, that I'm actually really excited to read. Some of our listeners in Canada or people who've traveled in Canada know about this. There's this real interesting thing of like you'll be in the middle of nowhere in Canada, in like rural Saskatchewan or something, and there will be these Chinese cafes. And it's like, how did you get here?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the business plan? And also, how is this thriving? And I believe this professor, my memory is that his parents had actually run one of these places. And so he made a documentary about it. And so I, you know, was like into anything that had film in the title. I was like, I'll take that. But then just in passing, and not, this was not a religion class, he just randomly sort of was mentioning some stuff about the Bible. And I was, you know, at that point, my thought on the world was that the Bible is a very literal document. And this guy wasn't, he didn't get there. He wasn't there trying to, you know, talk people into or out of any kind of religious worldview. He was just talking about it in this casual way that caused me to, for myself, really question some of the literal stuff in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Like, did that literally happen? And I don't mean that in the way that we now all use literal incorrectly, but that was the beginning of me pulling on a thread. Like, well, but wait a minute, if that didn't literally happen, and here's why, because we've seen what he basically did was just mention kind of casually about how the Bible, the stuff that ended up in the Bible, the kind of strange journey that that information or those stories took, and what got in the Bible and what didn't get in the Bible and what was in the Bible and then taken out of the Bible over the generations. And it just made me think about that document a little differently than I had as, like, say, a kid. I mean, I went into – I've talked about this on the show a lot, but I went into the University of Washington thinking that I was going to just slay them with my anti-evolution and my young earth gotchas. I was ready to just – bring that place down, and it took about 20 minutes for that that plan to fall apart. Much like the Seahawks establishing the run, I realized early on this was not going to work.
You know, we started this conversation by me saying I don't remember a lot from college, and it's true. Like, there's so many details about the specific lessons that are just, I couldn't even, you know, there are a million authors and book titles that I'm trying to think of right now that are just outside my grasp. Of course, it's also kind of common for me on the show. Once I start to try to remember something, it's like a dream that you've just woken up from and you can't remember the details, even if you do remember getting into a fight with a boy band backstage of a TBTL event. Anyway, I wish I remembered more, but I hope this conversation, I mean, it's kind of reminding me how much I got from college, like not just the social aspects of it and learning how to be an adult and living on my own, because not everybody, by the way, that's also a very, like, you know, late 90s kind of approach to college. People, all kinds of walks of life decide to go to college and have different experiences. Some of them mean living on campus. Many don't mean living on campus. I happen to go that route. But just sitting in the classroom and just, like, dedicating, you know, 2 to 4 years of your life just sitting and learning and knowing that it will pay off, or sometimes even not even specifically pay off to your career, but just because it's good to know things is, I don't know. I'm remembering how important that is.
Oh, I miss it now. It's like many things that happen in your life where at the time you're probably like, ugh, I just want to get through. Not unlike our TBTL 3000 tour, Andrew. I think we're just going to want to survive it. And then when we're done, or maybe years later, it'll be like, oh, remember that time we burned down that Waffle House? I mean, we'll be corresponding from prison.
Remember that time we were in
a jail? And we'll be disagreeing about, like, I'll be like, Andrew, you're the one that wanted to do the pyrotechnics. And you're like, I don't think I voted for that. And I'm like, I remember you did. And I was like, bad idea. And you were like, no, it's got to be pyrotechnics.
Is this Roman candle smothered or covered? I can't remember.
Hey, if any of the listeners see a pair of sunglasses on the ground that look like they could have been worn by Lenny Kravitz, hit him up on Twitter, because he's pretty, and particularly if you're in the LA area, that's where he apparently lost them. He posted on Twitter, I'm missing this pair of sunglasses after my show in LA at the Shrine this weekend. They are incredibly sentimental to me. They are vintage, and they belonged to a family member. Hoping to get them back. No questions asked. Any information, please email kravitzglasses@gmail.com. There's something about Lenny Kravitz creating a new Gmail address to get his sunglasses back that just delights me to know. And not that he lost his sunglasses. I feel bad for him. Although I don't feel like Lenny Kravitz and I would have a ton to talk about other than our penchant for losing sunglasses. I have lost...
like, I would love it if you got to meet him and just, like, got to talk about your penchant for losing sunglasses.
That's what I would do. And I would ask him if he has my Ray-Bans. We had a bunch of folks over this summer. Roden, our friend JD, their wives and kids... it was a delightful day, but I had these Ray-Ban sunglasses. Now I can't find them, and I'm not saying one of the children stole them. I'm just saying I can't find them anymore.
It might not have been a child. What if it was Roden or JD? I honestly can't think about who I trust less in that duo.
I don't know how to ask them without it seeming weird. Like, hey, did you accidentally grab my Ray-Ban sunglasses thinking they were yours? I doubt they did. They're probably, I don't know, wrapped up in a beach towel somewhere. I need to just, like, toss the whole house before I start throwing around allegations. But, man, I lose sunglasses like they're going out of style. I bought these new ones that I've been wearing that I guess I'll be wearing on our trip, which are actually Varnays, which were way too expensive. The way I got talked into them was, well, first thing, Carrie and I, we were driving down to Seattle to visit our friend. She lives on a houseboat. So I knew it was going to be like sit around outside in the sun times. And I could not find my sunglasses. So it was a Sunday, and I found one place that was open in Wallingford selling sunglasses. And it turns out it was like a optical store. And I went in, and they had this one pair of Varnay sunglasses, which were – that was a huge thing. When I was a kid, Varnays were like – I don't know if they made their way to Ohio, but did you guys have – was Varnay a thing?
No, I think I've heard you mention it before, but I don't – it's not
really
my wheelhouse.
There were certain brands that were iconic, and they were like rich kid things. Mm. Varnay was one. Breezen was this brand of – I don't even think it was expensive. It just seemed like a cool kid thing to me. Varnay, though, definitely had a kind of a very cool French vibe to it. People would wear Varnay sweatshirts and things. But I'm sure it's been back. Like, I'm sure that, like, there's a rapper wearing a Varnay t-shirt right now on Instagram getting all the likes. But anyway, I go into the store and I find these glasses, and they're, like, way too expensive for sunglasses. But the lady tells me that because they're ophthalmic, I can use my HSA account to pay for them, my tax-free. These are technically prescription sunglasses, even though they're not for me. So that kind of got me over the hump.
Nice.
And now I really love them. I actually really like these sunglasses, but I will drown before I let these sunglasses fall into a lake. Like I will do whatever I have to do to preserve. I've been keeping them in the case at all times. I never let them be separated from the case unless they're on my face, unless I'm wearing them, because I have just been on such a hot streak. I've lost like three pair of not super expensive, but still pretty nice sunglasses in the last, like, 5 months.
Well, I will say this. Don't tell Roden about those sunglasses, because that seems like a pretty quick way to lose them. We're just talking about media law. Slander is a real thing. I don't think that he's a public figure, so I'm not protected in that respect. So I should be careful what I say here. But I'm just saying, you said you drown before you let them, you know, fall into a lake. Well, also, don't let them fall into a Roden. If you know what I'm saying.
Is that why I saw Roden wearing a pair of Lenny Kravitz's sunglasses recently? Which I've got to be honest with you, he pulls them off better than I expected.
I literally did just Google eBay sunglasses worn by Luke Burbank just to see if anybody might have stolen your glasses and is trying to sell them because you are also a public figure. But doesn't seem like there's anything available there. I was ready to laugh at this Lenny Kravitz story. And when you read the Gmail address, like, That is funny, but honestly, like, I'm not some Lenny Kravitz fan at all. Like, as far as his music, I have no use for it at all. I don't hate the guy, but I'm like you, like, from...
It Ain't Over Till It's Over is, I have to say, really? A solid jam.
It doesn't do anything for me, and as a celebrity, doesn't do anything for me necessarily. But, man, this is, like, the most I've liked him. Actually, again,
right.
Not that
it's
I've
very relatable.
Just, it's so relatable, and I hope he does find him. And I think he's being honest when he says they belong to a family member. And of course, he has so many famous family members, right? Who's his? Isn't he the son of somebody famous? No,
no, he's the. He used to be partnered with Lisa Bonet. Mm-hmm. Now he and
daughter.
Their daughter is mm-hmm. Zoe Kravitz, who's mm-hmm. an actor and model. And so he's, funnily enough, Zoe and Lenny Kravitz are the kind of spokes. Family for Tumi, some luggage that I have used over the years. And if you ever go in the Tumi store, it's just these like looped videos of Zoe and Lenny Kravitz on the like most beautiful island adventure you've ever seen. And you're just like, how did you get to have this life? And I don't. But I just the idea of Lenny Kravitz is like Lenny Kravitz getting dressed in the morning is a hilarious concept. Like I would watch that skit like. It's like he just puts on a jacket and then he's like, nah. And he takes it off and he rips the arms off. Then he puts it back on. He's like, yeah, getting closer. And then he like, takes this T-shirt he was wearing underneath and he cuts that up a little bit. He's like, nah, it's still too much shirt. Takes the T-shirt off, bare chest, puts on the denim vest, and then puts on a giant medallion necklace. He's like, getting closer. Mm-hmm. Like what Lenny Kravitz's guiding North Star on what his fashion is. I mean, it's what it is raw sex appeal, which is basically the opposite of my guiding North Star, which is how do I look like I have fewer – my love handles don't look as big. But the thing is people – there's a real – as you might be unsurprised to hear, Walsh, there's a real battle raging in the mentions of this Lenny Kravitz tweet. You got people – we need to come up with a name for this person, this kind of person who – so Lenny Kravitz, you know, I'm missing my glasses. Please, if you could email me. And then – somebody in the comments, we just had hundreds of homes and families flooded here in Kingwood, Texas. sunglasses are your biggest problem. Sorry, Charlie.
No, he didn't say this is my biggest problem. Nowhere in his tweet did he say this is my biggest problem. Please help me. Are we not allowed to ask the internet just to keep an eye out for something that we might have dropped on the ground without somebody
in a different state? No, because you have made that a bigger priority than what's happening to Gail P, a.k.a. P.O.Peg 60. And then you got people just memeing out hard on Lenny. So they're like, you know, putting up Austin Powers memes or memes of people looking for things and other stuff that I don't even... Someone created a Lenny Kravitz Glasses Twitter account that's just at Kravitz Glasses and then, like, tweeted at him, I'm not lost, buddy. I just need some me time. People love that tweet. They think it's very funny. And then people are like... Everybody's just getting at him. Some people are making fun of him. Some people are trying to be helpful. Then somebody jumps in. This is actually... I've never heard this put this way, but I don't think it's a bad sentiment. Somebody called Lost Wolfling says, kindness and not typing this both cost you $0. Like, kindness doesn't cost you anything. And also not typing a snarky tweet costs you – those two things cost you $0. It's possible to not do those two things.
That was like, somebody not responding to Lenny but responding to one of the negative things about Lenny.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was confused there for a second. Yeah, exactly. Like, if you don't...
They're actually... Let's just play this. I don't know if this is going to be... This is actually only 3 seconds. This is the comedian Chris D'Elia. He put up a post where he's got, like, he's shirtless and he's wearing sunglasses and he replied directly to Lenny Kravitz. So let's see what he says here.
Founded him!
Okay, sorry, that was a little hot. He yelled founded him into the phone with his sunglasses on. I guess that's kind of, it's not the meanest joke you could make, but it's just like, you know, it's kind of being a little snarky towards Lenny. And then someone made fun of Chris D'Elia. And then this other person said, kindness and not typing this both cost you $0.
I see, okay.
Now we could debate Chris D'Elia's response. I just think the idea of like it costing me nothing to not make someone's life 5% worse.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way for me to think about things. When something's popping around the internet, particularly on Twitter, and I'm in a mood and I want to just like take someone down a notch, I'd do well to remind myself, you know, it costs me nothing to not do that
right
to that person.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, we got to get out of here, but would it be all right with you if I make the executive decision to go out with what I think is a legit good song done by one Lenny Kravitz? If you like this song, email itaintovertillitsover@gmail.com, where Lenny accepts compliments on this music. You're saying this song doesn't do it for you?
I mean, I don't...
All right.
Nah, I mean, I do think Lauren Ober... Our APM friendo should have a song called It Ain't Ober Till It's Ober. I mean, that would be good.
That would work. All right. That's going to do it for our show today. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Hey, you know what else? People legit are going to want to know what happened with your garbage.
Oh, well, that's true.
Know.
Yeah, well, I did get an email back from the property manager saying that she has contacted the city. They are supposed to come in the next 24 hours. I will let you know.
Okay, I'll be here listening to Lenny Kravitz and looking for my sunglasses. Until then, thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
power out.